Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Hello, welcome everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Julieta, I'm a recruiter with Ruckus. Quick intro, my background is in law and technology, where I was able to work with both big and small technology startups. I'm currently London-based and I work with both our European and American clients. Today, I'm joined by Victoire Lester, who's the CEO of Cucu, which is more than a French school. Victoire, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's my first podcast, so I'm a little nervous, but very excited. So my name is Victoire Lester. I'm originally from Paris. I grew up next to Paris and moved to New York about 9 years ago, originally to do academic research, so completely different than what I'm doing now. I was getting my master's in cultural studies, specifically sociology of music. So I was like nerding out in libraries and going to shows and talking to musicians. That was wonderful. And then everything changed when I found a part-time teaching gig, you know, kind of looking for a job. I was looking for something on the side and I knocked at the door of Cucu to become a teacher. And my journey started 7 years ago. And over the course of the last 7 years, I've been, you know, I started as a teacher teaching like 25 hours a week. And then they needed someone to help them with admin. And I jumped in and I did basically every possible job at this company. Like I did reception, customer service, marketing, events, operations. I was director of operations for 3 years. And recently, as of this year in March, I was appointed CEO of the company. So that's a big shift in my career and a very excited moment as Cucu turns 10 years this year. It's new leader. So yeah, it's really cool.
Congratulations on your new role. So how was it sort of like going from part-time teacher, just moving to the US to becoming the CEO? And yeah, how was the journey?
Insane. Very, very dynamic. I feel like this, you know, you get opportunities in the US and in New York that you can't really get in Europe. And I really did the groundwork and it paid off. And that's, I think, really, I'm still amazed by it every day. You know, it was very interesting because when I started, I discovered a passion for teaching and it was a very, very rewarding job, you know, meeting American adults passionate about French culture, like sharing that with them. I became very animated with it. But also, and a little bit of background about Cucu, you know, the company was 3 years old when I started. It was started by two French cousins who started the company when they were respectively 26 and 27 years old and had no prior business experience. And it was just operating at a small like corner shop in Brooklyn. And as I started teaching, I was also immediately fascinated with the small business aspects of things. And I really wanted to understand every aspect of how a small business works and can grow and develop. And so they needed someone to help with admin and I did it, but mostly I think I built my job understanding like what holes needed to be filled in the company because it was very, very small. And that's how I ended up doing every possible position. And over, you know, I've never been bored and there was always a new challenge and something new to learn. And I feel like this really gave me, as now a leader, like a 360 understanding of what the company is about and what its like qualities and flaws are and what needs to be made better. Because I've been at every step of the way, I've been the product being a teacher and I've been the operations and I've been the promotion. So yeah, I feel like I truly believe that you can't really lead if you have not done the job yourself. You can't really understand things. As well.
Absolutely. And how was it sort of like the transition between, okay, them passing on the baton to you as the founders who started this company just out of passion? And then, okay, Victoire, we see that potentially you've been essentially handling everything so far. So at least this is just to make this official. How do you balance like the changes you want to make versus the founders? And how do you guys interact within the company? How does that hierarchy work?
That's an excellent question. So first of all, at Cucu, we're all very close. It's a small team. Like when I started, like it was basically four of us around the table. Now we have 15 people in the admin team and about 35 teachers spread across New York, LA, and online. So now, you know, we came when I started, it was like, we're 3 people in the admin, maybe 5 teachers. Now we're like 50 people. So, and then this position has been pretty recent. So we've had also to really restructure ourselves internally from a very small business where everyone wears all the hats to something a bit more structured. And my role as CEO started as we were like really intentionally operating this restructuring. We're the 2 founders, along with a third partner who built, who started our LA school, started having very defined roles. So now one founder is a COO, another partner is a CMO. The other co-founder left to build a startup, which and maybe I will talk about later. But yeah, so it's the hierarchy is, it is and isn't in a way, meaning that I have the last word on everything and I'm the main decision maker, but everything is a conversation and I'm not going to say, this is it. From now on, we're changing things because technically they're still the owners. They're still my bosses. So that's a little tricky. That's why I'm saying that it is and isn't, is that I'm more like the captain of the cuckoo boat, but there are like several brains operating on the decision-making process.
That sounds kind of like very difficult as a transition to be like, okay, we're sort of like everyone's doing everything from a very small business. For instance, my family, I come from a family business. My family has a family business. And I grew up being like, breakfast is business, everything is business, 24/7, and we're all doing everything at the same time. So there isn't this, okay, everyone has their own assigned role, and that just becomes madness because the people that let the employees, the teachers, really don't know who to follow. And everyone's like, God, like Victoire told me to do this, and then this other person told me to do that. What do I do? How did that affect everything when you, obviously, when COVID hit and you had to go online?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. So that's that rewind a couple of years back. So at the time, I was director of operations and COVID hit, and it was obviously very scary because we had not ever had an online product before. We had never done online classes. And I really I wasn't put in charge of leading this transition. And I had to think very, very quickly on my feet. And my husband says that I became CEO in March 2020, which it's not true. But I kind of discovered that I had, you know, the capacity of leading a team and a company and being really strong in that aspect. And so basically, I figured out that, you know, what platform to use, Zoom, like trained myself and the other people in the admin team on how to use it, trained teachers on how to use it, and then had to do lots of communication among students. Like, I'm like, yeah, your class is going to transition in this new format. This is how Zoom works. That means most people had never used it before. So we kind of honestly did this transition like overnight or over a weekend, which was insane. Weekend of March 14, 15 of 2020. And it was so intense, so rewarding, because like we didn't close for one day. There was very much a feeling with all the teachers that we're all in this together and we're going to make it through. You guys are going to keep your jobs. We're going to keep our students. We're going to keep Cuckoo afloat and exist. And that was a beautiful adventure. And I think it really reinforced the links within the team. Like at that time, like I was like, you know, troubleshooting technical issues during the day, talking to freaked out teachers at night on the phone, trying to reassure them that things were going to be okay. And in the meantime, like trying to keep things exciting for our students. And so that's, you know, it really, Cuckoo has always tried to do things a little bit differently in terms of like school and stuff, but we really had to think out of the box at that time and reinvent ourselves. So we adapted the curriculum to an online platform. So we modified the way that some lessons were going. We added a new level for trying to target like new audiences who could be interested in our product in this weird time. We also got the opportunity to be more creative with workshops that we could do online. We were able to, like before, having the limitations of a physical space, you know, it was sometimes a little risky to try crazy ideas. What if no one shows up? What if no one signs up? Well, like on Zoom, you can do whatever you want. And I think we really learned a lot from that. And then the challenge was to keep our community going because we have a very, very strong IRL community that we can talk about later, and trying to keep this community alive in an online format. was challenging. But that's when our social media actually really picked up and we doubled down on efforts in that area. So ultimately, this was a crazy journey, big victory for the company because we made the same revenue in 2020 than in 2019, which was huge. We didn't have to fire anyone. And we opened up a whole new business avenue for Cuckoo with audiences. So yeah, I think it's pretty incredible.
That's amazing. And it's also, so we all know that New York, you have the schools both in New York and LA. And New York got hit pretty hard. And one of the first places that got hit pretty hard by COVID, it was such a scary time at the moment. And the oftentimes like language lessons, I've studied French for a couple of years, language lessons are very much about the personal touch and about being with the other person, speaking, talking to each other. I love the exercise. So usually have a conversation with the person next to you. So how did, and obviously that's a big part of this community and sort of sharing French culture is such a big part of Cuckoo. So how did you keep that warmth in you had in the classroom to Zoom, which everyone was like still getting used to on this online format, which was so weird? How did you manage to keep that sort of that high quality throughout your classes?
I think we owe that to our teachers. I think, you know, the qualities that we're looking for when we recruit our teachers is like, we're looking for personalities. We're looking for people who have a lot of empathy. You know, we can teach anyone like French, how to teach French grammar. We provide training, we can do that. But you can't teach someone to be like kind, intelligent, and empathetic. And that's really what we're looking for in our staff and in the method that we, you know, and in the teaching method that we provide. So I think that our teachers were able to keep that momentum going of, you know, checking in with their students, making them excited to see each other again every week. Like some Zoom classes were like lasting way longer than an hour and a half because like people were staying and like chatting and having like virtual drinks together. I think our classes really created something to look forward to in a time where the future was very uncertain. And in the present moment, we're like, oh, next week, I'm going to meet these people and we're going to learn new things together and share a special moment in a time of our lives that is scary and very boring. And so I think our teachers were really amazing in keeping that, as I said, this momentum and this ambiance and this learning environment going even online. And I think going praising them for them.
That's so good. So how do you find these people? How do you sort of pinpoint, okay, this person? And I think you also mentioned that they're all native French speakers. How do you sort of incorporate them into, and what is an American-based company? Mm-hmm. How do you incorporate all of these French-speaking people?
That's an excellent question. So yeah, so as you mentioned, all native French speakers, it's not easy to find them. Finding native French speaker with the proper work authorization is, you know, sometimes a needle in a haystack. And we, as I mentioned, we're not necessarily looking for people who have the most teaching experience. We're looking for people who are passionate about the language and passionate about people and sharing and culture and sharing their culture. So yeah, we're looking for specific personalities and people who can have, you know, the capacity to lead a group, be very energetic, make learning a language a lot of fun. And that's why a lot of our teachers are on the side, a part-time job for all of them, as it was for me. A lot of them on the side are like artists, actors, singers, dancers. And so they have that you know, little show business mentality. Because technically, like when you enter the classroom, you're the star of the show. You're like, you know, leading the pace of it. You're mobilizing the different people around the table. So we look for people who have that kind of aura and charisma. Of course, we have other teachers who are like a bit more on the reserved side, et cetera, but still they have that kindness and that warmth. And I think that's key because when you put yourself in the shoes of one of our students, let's say like a 45-year-old lawyer or something who like comes and sits in a group class with a bunch of people that he has never met and start saying words that sound weird and make mistakes and stuff like that, it's putting yourself in a very vulnerable position. And you need to have a lot of empathy to help people learn the language and feel comfortable and create that special environment that is going to make them progress, make them feel confident, make them want to come back the following week. If you keep things super dry and you grade them very harshly and it's not like, it's not what we're about, and we believe that it's not how you learn. So yeah, that's also why I'm completely digressing right now. I'm sorry, but that's also why the learning environment is, as I said, is so important from the teacher, but also like where you learn. And the design is very important in our classrooms. Like the school is really beautiful. It has like colorful walls, nice furniture, nice lighting. It's the idea is that you feel like you're at home with the teacher who could be your cool Parisian friend, you know, sharing a glass of wine while learning how to conjugate verbs. And that makes all the difference, and that create like an affection from our students to the business. What?
That just makes it so much easier. We're fine. You just get into the French mood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the, what you mentioned about the cultural fit, it's just like you can, I have this experience as a recruiter when I'm going through so many profiles and I'm like, oh my God, this person on paper looks amazing. Such great experience. And then when we go on the interview, I'm like, this person really wouldn't fit with just the culture. It's this like intangible feeling you have, like, I know personality wise, you wouldn't really fit in with a company. But also an interesting thing that you mentioned is that most of your teachers do this part-time, and then part-time they do a completely different thing. And many of them might have not ever thought about teaching. So how do you keep them motivated and keep them interested in the school when they're like, when they join being like, oh yeah, I'm actually really an actor. I'm doing this on the side to pay the bills, essentially. How do you keep these people motivated and engaged with being a teacher?
That's a great, I'm keeping saying that it's a great question, but you asked really good question, I have to say. Yeah, so as you mentioned, we look for soft skills. That's the most important. Soft skills and what they put in their cover letter basically is way more than their resume. And I think a lot of these people are looking for a gig that is going to be also more rewarding than waiting tables or like that type of thing. So I think what keeps them motivating is the students, first of all, because that you meet, it's an opportunity to meet so many people. Our student body is super diverse, all ages, all backgrounds in terms of like where the country where they're from, the jobs that they do, what their family looks like. It's really something that keeps you very open-minded and you're constantly surprised. So I think that part is very, very rewarding. It was very rewarding for me as a teacher. I feel like I broadened my horizons considerably interacting with all of our students. And then also, I feel like this is a little bit of a home away from home for teachers, as it was for myself and for the French people in the admin team. We are all like French people who are very integrated in American society. Like most of us have an American partners or on the side are working in American companies, have American friends. And like, coming here and feeling like we can, you know, be on the same wavelength and have the same humor. And there is really a big sense of community that also conveys throughout all of the events that we have outside of classes. So we throw parties several times a year. No better marketing than a party. Like you put very good music, very good cocktails, you dance all night and you just want to come back to either your class or either your job because you had a lot of fun. So that's big. And also we have like special events for teachers. Like we have every month, we have what we call apéro in French, where it's like kind of drinks and snacks in the earlier part of the night, happy hour, if you call it, only for the team to try to like really, you know, make people like strengthen these relationships. And there has been, you know, over the course of the last 10 years that Pinku has existed, like some people, teachers or students, because it's a whole, you know, the community is made up of teachers and students. People have met their best friend, their significant other, their travel companion, like their best group of, you know, party friends, whatever. But people really create meaningful relationships through the school. The founder met her husband here.
There you go.
So I think that's, yeah, that's what makes us really special.
Yeah. So you mentioned that most of your stuff is from France, but you also obviously have American people working there. How do you balance that American work culture versus the French work culture?
Wow, that's a good point, because it's pretty recent that we've started hiring American people, because what's also pretty specific about the way we function at Hugo is that most of the people in the admin team started as teachers, just like me. So if, you know, you find yourself with a passion for this company, you want to like continue moving forward, well, we're a growing business. We have opportunities to have you and help us develop the activity in various areas. So most of the people in the admin team still are French and are former teachers, but you know, not everyone has the specific skills that we need as a business, you know, in terms of customer service, in terms of like more technical skills. So we have to bring American people on board. We started doing it last year, and now we have 4 or 5 American employees. And it's tricky, because that's so in the interview process, like we spend a lot of time talking about the culture of the company, because French people and American people have different ways of behaving, have different humor. And we don't want like the American employees to feel singled out necessarily. We do ask for all of our American employees to have an interest for French culture, or even at least speak a little bit of French. So because it's impossible to really understand the product or do your job well if you don't have that, at least a profound interest for French culture. So these people are trying to like, you know, what French culture is about. But it's true that, you know, French people can be very direct in the way they talk to each other in the workplace, can give like pretty raw feedback. And we're learning that, you know, in an American environment, you need to like put things in shape a little differently. If you want your message to be received well, like we're learning as well as French people working with them. So it's a balancing act, I'll say. And also we try to like not like for the couple of employees who are not necessarily fluent, we speak as much English as we speak French in the office. And we always try to translate things. And whenever we have a meeting with only French speakers and one person who is not fluent, we do the whole meeting in English. Like English, I'll say is, yeah, it's 50-50 in terms of that, the language that we use at work. But yeah, we're learning a lot. And it's, you know, can never be perfect, but I think it's probably pretty enriching for American employees to be in that type of environment as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's very tricky, so balancing so many different nationalities. And the one thing you learn is that there's no such thing as common sense. You shouldn't take anything for granted. Like at Ruckus, we're such an international team. We're all over in Europe, in South America, in North America. We're all over and constantly moving as well. So we oftentimes have to also, and we're a fully remote team. So we oftentimes have to like be like, okay, it's so different sending just like a Slack message and the way it can be perceived to talking face to face, and be like, oh wait, I wasn't really understanding this. This sort of feedback is really, this really direct feedback doesn't really sit well with me from my cultural background. So what advice would you give other leaders with this sort of very international team, sense of balancing different cultures and creating a company culture is friendly for everyone and all of its employees?
I think communication is key. Communication and transparency, and not being afraid to repeat yourself as well. So we try to put processes in place where we have regular like meetings with everyone in the team, and every team has to really explain what they're doing at different times. We want everyone to know what's going on almost at all times, like when things are ready to be shared, but we don't want employees to have blind spots. And yeah, so I think being transparent and being like as clear and also as kind. One of the principles that I live by is treat people the way that you'd like to be treated. And I think in the same way that we really emphasize the need for our teachers to be kind and empathetic, if I have to give feedback or course correct things, like I try to be firm, constructive, but really explain the reasoning behind it. And I feel like, yeah, if you communicate the how and the why, then I think feedback will be received way better. It's not like a magical recipe, but it's just try to be a good human and put yourself in the shoes of the person that's in front of you.
Yeah. And do you feel that now that you're the CEO, the things you say sort of like have a bit more impact and it really reads on a different level now that you're the CEO instead of the head of operations or just a fellow teacher?
That's something that I've heard a lot. Of how once you're in charge, then you say something and people are going to like immediately try to do what you said when it's, oh, we're like, oh no, I was just like throwing something against the wall. Please don't do what I said right now. I feel like that, yes and no, because as I said, I try to explain the process. I'm like, I'm thinking of this, like, because of this, this and that, what do you think? I always ask people what they think. And try to give them opportunity for feedback. And I'm always open for a conversation. And I try to make kind of when, unless it's really necessary, but I try to make everything a conversation. But it is true that something a little personally, a little challenging for me as I became the CEO is I used to know these people. I used to be in their shoes. I used to be friends with them. I used to like, and now I feel like, sometimes maybe people don't tell me things the way that they used to tell me before. And that's normal. Sometimes it makes me a little sad, but I think that's normal and healthy. That, yeah, sometimes I enter a room and everyone stops talking. And I'm like, what's up? It's completely normal. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. It creates a bit of a distance. It's sort of like hard. It's hard that transition to, okay, I'm the CEO now. And being able to still reach the people and still have that open communication and them not feeling like a bit like intimidated just by the title to come on and speak to you and reach out. Do you still have some of your teachers online or are all of them in person, both in New York and LA?
We still have online classes, but some of our teachers have moved during the pandemic. So they keep teaching our online classes, but like teachers who are based in LA or in New York, like we try to have them teach in person as much as possible, because that's where we still have like approximately 30% of our business taking place online, which is amazing. But like the demand for in-person classes keeps growing. So yeah, if teachers are here, they need to come and teach in person. Yeah.
Great. And do you yourself travel to, so you're based in New York. Do you travel back to LA to meet all the teachers there as well? Do you travel much back and forth between New York and LA?
Not that much as of now, because I've also just had a baby this year, which is a big year. but at least once a year, go to LA at least once a year. I'll go there in October. We're going to have a retreat for the full-time admin employees in California. So we try to like, you know, build a bridge between New York and California. But yeah, the weather is nicer, exactly. But the CMO and COO of Google are based in LA and they travel regularly to New York because like their teams, like a lot of people in their teams are here in New York. So it's really important that they see each other. Like for me, like the team in LA is way smaller. And most of the business is in New York. So yeah, I go there, but they come here more.
Yeah. So do you feel it's difficult sort of like to maintain? How do you feel it is like to maintain those two locations connected and it being like the same school and not them not becoming like just completely different schools? How do you maintain like that like cuckoo identity and culture as one?
So in the beginning, so Cuckoo LA was started in 2017, Cuckoo New York in 2013. And up until last year, the two companies were separate LLCs. And just as of 2023, we incorporated in one main company with three branches, in-person New York, in-person LA, and online. And I feel like it's really, you know, 2020 and the shift to online classes really united the two companies together because, yeah, we were kind of starting to do competing businesses. If one company was doing online classes and the other one, you know, so we had to harmonize our schedule, start working together more and, you know, being like really tied into the same strategy. And with the restructuring that I talked about a little bit earlier, with the founders and partners starting to have a more defined role than before, I think that really helped. Because the fact that, for example, our CMO is based in LA, working with people in New York, we have to be connected. And we, you know, we picked Margot as CMO because she had the previous experience and strong interest in marketing. And she's, you know, was really the best person for the job. The fact that she was not based in New York didn't stop us from giving her this responsibility. And I think that it's really helping, you know, in the day-to-day and the day-to-day workflow, that things are, you know, balanced between the two cities. So yeah, we spend a lot of time on Zoom, which is not my favorite, but you know, that's and I think it's pretty enriching.
Yeah. And how have you sort of like incorporated the technology into your classes, and how has it been sort of like, okay, during COVID, but now after COVID, that you have sort of like resumed your in-person classes, how has technology impacted the classes at QQ now?
So it's in the works. And because basically, I mean, as I said, we adapted our class formats for it to fit Zoom and a digital class format. But within our in-person classes at QQ, we still want to provide more resources, and we want technology to help us do what we do better. And like all of our students, no matter what, use a lot of technological resources outside the classroom. Like all of them use Duolingo, watch YouTube videos, French TV shows. You can't learn a language from scratch with just an hour and a half of class per week. Like you have to immerse yourself in French and do a lot of other things outside of classes. So that's why our co-founder, Leah, who was CEO before me, she left QQ this year to start her own startup, which is also the reason why I am appointed CEO now. And she's really creating, her startup is going to be a sister company to QQ, where she's creating a streaming platform for learning French. And with mixing education and entertainment in really high quality educational videos, basically you imagine you mix like Netflix with Masterclass and Peloton, having, you know, a teacher and someone to coach you through learning the language.
And so they want to sign up.
And so, yeah, so it's really a sister company. And like when her product is finalized, we're going to be able to implement some of her videos in our classes. And there's really going to be a bridge for students between the platform and the live classes.
Yeah, that's so interesting how they started this school, just at age 26, no business experience whatsoever. And then it just grew so much. And now Leah is moving on to building her own like platform that's going to interact with her original project. And how do you see the two sister companies working together in the future? What's sort of the vision, if you can share with us?
That's hard to say because it's really the premises right now. But really the hope, you know, is like you would have, you know, this platform is going to be able to reach way more people than we can at QQ, because also our product is like not cheap. And so this platform, who is going to be at a more accessible price point, is going to be able to like reach more people and kind of broadcast the QQ teaching style and atmosphere to more people across the US and the world. And the idea is that, you know, some of our teachers will star into these videos. And you can be like, oh, like you like, you know, the teaching style, you like this teacher, well, come and take a live class with them, which is more like the premium product. So the idea is that our students will benefit from, you know, the platform as a learning resource, but also people who will sign up to the platform will have like an entry point to QQ and will be able to convert into QQ customers as well.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And so QQ seems to be just an upward trajectory, absolutely. And just the team keeps growing, especially you've seen it grow so much from when you first started as a teacher. And now till I think you mentioned over 50 people, I think in total. So how do you keep that really tight family like feeling with everyone, and still, even as you keep on growing and your numbers keep growing, how do you still keep that culture intact?
That's a challenge. But I think a lot of it goes through the training process that we provide teachers. So we provide an initial training of approximately 25 hours when a teacher starts. And then we have continuous training as things go on various topics. And I think it's really about creating opportunities for teachers to meet and exchange and bounce ideas off each other. And, you know, you can't force everyone to become your best friend, but you can try to create the conditions for it to be possible. So as I said, you know, the events, the importance of the training, and it's something, yeah. I mean, it's a question that I ask myself every day, like, how can we stay true to the essence of Cuckoo as we grow and not have like our spirit diluted by our worst nightmare is like a teacher just coming and doing their job out of the book and just delivering the material in a cold way and then leaving and our students feeling that it's transactional. That's contrary of what we want. And so I think it's just efforts of, yeah, training, communication, maintaining a link between people, have like our employees continuing to transmit the passion and everything that Cuckoo is about as and just remind people of it and also welcome them and be kind and be interested in what they're about and what's going on in their lives and asking questions. Keep asking questions.
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing to keep in mind, especially as the CEO or if you're in any managerial position. I was like, okay, we're growing. I can't really have a one-on-one coffee with every single person. I don't see them at the office every day, especially as the company keeps on growing, has more locations. But keeping in mind what the, so keeping your north very clear, it's like, okay, this is where we're going. This is the essence of Cuckoo. And if we're going away from it, that's clearly not the way. And we should stick true to what the essence is and perhaps sort of like prioritize that as keeping that essence versus like just neck break, speed and growth and just let's make money and let's stop caring about the culture. And I think that's very, very important because if you reach that point, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, that's why we have to be very careful scaling. And we want to scale. Like that's, you know, the goal is to keep growing. But I think it's also, and a lot of the job that I'm doing right now is really kind of reshaping our foundation and structure for things to be smoother and take a little less time on the admin side. It's a lot of work, but then making the experience smoother for teachers and allowing more time for all the other stuff. And as you said, yeah, I don't have a lot of time. I can't like also now, you know, before I had a kid, I was staying at the school until 7:30 p.m., 8 p.m. at night, chatting with everyone, like being there. And I miss that so much. Now that I have a baby, I have to leave at like 5:15 sharp, which is hard. So I miss that kind of like emulation of like when this time in the evening, when like all teachers and students arrive and it's kind of messy, but very joyful and everyone tells you about their day and like the class that they're about to teach. I think that's crucial. But then it's also about picking the right people to replace you in that role and keeping that culture going. And then with the admin employees, like which is a smaller team, then I can like make time to like go have lunch, understand like what you're thinking about, what are your hopes and dreams, like how do you see yourself evolving at the company. Then it's more manageable for me to do that. But the part of really like keeping in touch with all the teachers, like I have to delegate that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. And and you've gone through wearing all of the hats. It must have been such a learning process to learn how to delegate. And because everyone has their own ways. And if you keep those, this is my recipe book and I'm not sharing it with anyone, but being like, okay, you're now the new manager. This is how we want you to do things. And just like, how was that experience?
I mean, it's very interesting because so I left, so I became CEO coming back from maternity leave. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the structural changes that I was working to put in place were put in effect at the time where I went on maternity leave. Mm-hmm. And it was scary because I was doing so much that I was like, you know, we reorganized the teams, it worked well, and it made me realize that it was a big liability having a lot of processes live in one person's brain is very dangerous. So that's why I'm really, my main mission this year is to just clean out our internal processes, bring structure into the mix, everyone knowing what their mission is and learn like how to manage everyone properly for them to not feel like they're micromanaged, because I can be guilty of that, unfortunately, since I've been in their shoes. But like leaving them the freedom of doing it their own way, but making them comfortable to come if they have questions, if they need to solve a problem. So yeah, that's learning here.
That's the maternity leave clearly was like, okay, you're forced now to pass down all of your knowledge onto the people. And it's really good that you're able to see that and sort of like let go. And I feel like it really shows in Cuckoo that you can come in with literally as a part-time teacher and be like, you're really allowed to grow and to grow within the company and to adopt so many new roles depending on your interests. And I think that really fosters confidence in the employees to be like, okay, I can come up to Victor and be like, hey, I think we could be doing this differently. So I think that just giving them that career progression is so important as a CEO, because if they just join and like, oh, I'm just going to be a part-time teacher forever, and this is not really pushing me forward. So thank you, Victor, so much for your insights coming from being a part-time teacher to the CEO of the company, really helping with the reorganization of Cuckoo from a small business, a small language school, just as a passion project, from 2 cousins to this huge school with so many students. And the way was able to sort of like get past the pandemic without losing like a single class, a single number in revenue. That's just so outstanding, especially coming in after maternity leave as the CEO. It's just amazing to see what you've accomplished and what Cuckoo has for the future.
Thank you so much, Julieta. It was really great chatting with you.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.